This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy that I am back in the studio here at Tantalk Radio Network. Oh, I love to be behind this microphone, and it is such a thrill today. I am going to be talking to two absolutely fantastic thrill writers, and at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Bert Weisbord about his new book, and it's going to be just so much fun to talk to him. And he was a script writer in Hollywood and a producer, and so he has a lot of information that I know all of you listeners out there will be interested in. But first, I get to turn to somebody who, well, I think of so often because I look at his picture. Hi! And I'm really so happy to welcome John Gilstrap. Hi, John.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, as I said, I look at your picture every day because Pekka, as you know, you met Pekka at BoucherCon, and he's my cuddly teddy bear, and people have commented that you look like a cuddly teddy bear, too.
And
so it's a very popular, you know, I go when I, well, when I used to go to meetings and meet people and bring, you know, props. One of the props I always bring, it's your photo with Pekka, and people love it. And so, but of course, the past few months, for a while there, I was even broadcasting at home in my kitchen, but it's nice to be back in the studio.
Well, that must be a challenge, running a radio show out of your kitchen.
It was, but luckily, I have this new, absolutely wonderful dishwasher, Whirlpool Whisper. And one day, when I first did it, I didn't realize the dishwasher was on. That's how quiet it is.
Wow.
It's an amazing dishwasher. I was into the program. I started it, and then I realized, my goodness, the dishwasher's on. And I just gotten this brand new dishwasher, and it's so quiet. Absolutely fantastic, because usually they sound like freight trains. Well, where can I start with you? I was looking forward to seeing you at the next BoucherCon, because we met here at BoucherCon here in St. Petersburg when we had this wonderful event at the Vinoy Hotel. But unfortunately, the BoucherCon for this year has been canceled.
Yep. Everything's been canceled, it seems.
Yes, and I'm sure all of your promotional plans for this wonderful new book, 12th book, Hellfire, is, well, you're not going on any road tours, I assume.
No, there's no place to go. You know, we've got the, I have become very good at navigating Zoom. So we're doing a number of virtual tour kinds of things. I haven't started them yet. They're on the schedule. We'll see how it goes. I don't really understand how to interact with a room full of people.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. It's not quite the same. It's not, and of course, when I've seen you at BoucherCon and the one in Dallas in October, you were headlining one of the panels. And I think your panel was the best one of the entire event, because you really had the right group of people and the enthusiasm, so that you really inspired all of the writers who were there and, of course, so many of your fans.
Well, you know, a panel is such a crapshoot because it depends on who, you know, we don't staff them. It's the staff of the panel members really don't have a say on who's going to be in their panel. And every now and then you just get that kind of magical combination where, you know, everybody's confident, everybody's entertaining, they're not hungover, and
yeah, that can happen.
And the presentation goes well.
Or sometimes they are hungover and they're in a very, very chirpy mood.
So yeah, that's happened too.
Yeah, that's happened too. I did notice that at one of the panels at the Vinoy, and I thought, oh, well, I know where I saw that person last night, and they were still let's say just having fun. So yeah, you never know. Now we're going to talk about the great new book, 12th book, and everybody has to know that you are a New York Times best-selling author. The new book is Hellfire. I love your website. It's so dramatic. The cover of you know, Hellfire is dramatic, and your website has it right there at the top. It's it is a wonderful, wonderful book, and it brings us back to all of the people that we love that you have peopled your books with, and you know, from Boxer to Venice and Dig and even Gail. You have a wonderful, wonderful group of characters in your book. But before we talk about the book, I want to just talk about the dedication to your book. To whom did you dedicate this book?
You got to refresh my memory.
Somebody named Joy?
Oh, God, yes, my bride of 36 years.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, like, I think I think you should remember her.
Oh, no, I don't. I've done a lot of dedications sometimes. They're, you know, most of them are to her, but not all of them.
Well, so. I didn't know if, like, it's like Hellfire had something to do with your relationship or something.
There are days.
That's why I thought maybe John is having fun with this. Because, of course, for me, it was a thrill to see that your wife's name is Joy. So, actually, you can think about Joy on paper every day when you talk to her.
There we go.
We have a connection there because Joy is an important word for me. It's funny, Jonathan Sentlifer's wife is also named Joy, and so it's I get all these connections to Joy, and I love the name, and I think that just saying it every day is a joy.
Well, you know, when she was in college, her freshman year in college, Joy's roommates were Faith and Hope.
Well, briefly, in my youth, I wanted to change my name to Faith. I don't know why. That was the idea at the time. I just thought that was cute, and it's always. I've discovered something. You know, I've been doing this program now a little over 5 years. March was my 5th anniversary. One of the things I've discovered is that the relationship between a fan and the author is important. At the minute a fan starts thinking of an author as a person, it's something ingrained in us that we care about the author. And so I always like to bring out this personal side. So people know that your wife's name is Joy. They think of the word Joy, and they're going to think, I hope they'll first think of Joy on paper. But then they'll say, oh, you know, Jonathan, yeah. I mean, John Gilstrap has a wife named Joy. And there's something about you, also when you look at your face and you're so cheerful looking, it's Joy. And I want people to have this connection to you because your books, you connect us very, really. Of course, I know that you're writing them with seeing them in your head, but I want you to talk a little bit about the storyline, and particularly, I love the firehouse, and I have to ask this because I had meant to ask you before. Have you slid down the pole in a firehouse?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
it's not always pretty. At 2 in the morning, it can be kind of a rough landing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, that you have done it, because you can tell people a little bit about your background, why you would be in a firehouse in the first place.
Well, early on, long before I became a writer, writing is something I've always wanted to do, but my first book didn't come out until my late 30s. And prior to that, I spent 15 years in the Fire and Rescue Service, and both in Fairfax County, Virginia, and then most of it in Prince William County, Virginia, ran thousands of calls. And the firehouse is hard to explain if you haven't been around that community, but it's a very special place. It's every firehouse smells the same, sort of a combination of old rubber and mildew and smoke, and, you know, it's a lovely spot. And within the, it's a lovely spot. It's I find it an inspiring spot. You know, some of my best friends and some of the bravest, funniest, meanest people I've ever known, I've met through a firehouse. So when I was writing the book, No Mercy came out in 2009. It was the first book in the Jonathan Graves series. So you start building this world, and Jonathan is very wealthy because his father was a criminal and is now serving a life term, and Jonathan has his father's money and some of his own, obviously. And he decided to sell the childhood mansion in Fisherman's Cove, which is a fictional town in Virginia, for $1 to St. Catherine's Catholic Church on the condition that it be turned into a place called Resurrection House, which is a residential home for the children of incarcerated parents. And then he bought the firehouse that when he was a child, he would hang out with the firefighters and sort of was their mascot when he was a kid. He did a lot of polishing, and they taught him how to play poker and all that. So the firehouse to Jonathan is a very special place, too. So he got rid of the home that he has bad memories of, and he moved down the street, and he converted the firehouse into both his home and office. And I don't know, that was just a conceit that I really enjoyed writing. You know, it would be kind of... living in a converted firehouse would be really pretty cool.
Exactly. And as a script writer, every time I read that, I see the streaming video that I want done of all of your books. You know, I particularly love Bosch, and I sometimes when I'm watching Bosch, I think, why aren't they doing Jonathan Graves? I almost called you Jonathan because Jonathan, you are John, you are Jonathan, because it would be such a wonderful series. The storyline of Jonathan Graves and the work that they do rescuing kidnapped people, and in this case, kidnapped children, which is a really wonderful story here in Hellfire. So, but I'm sure that you visualized that yourself a few times as a location, the main location for your streaming video series, right?
Right, exactly. And I frequently scream at the television, come on, guys, why not me? So far, hey, if there are any producers out there, call me.
Well, I'm going to be talking to some producers, and I'm telling them, really, that they really have to pick this series up. You have now, this is the 12th book. There's a lot of storylines here to go with. We could have 12 seasons of this. Sometimes when somebody writes a series, you really have created these people that... It's like coming, when you pick up one of your books, it's like sort of coming home and like coming to the little town, and you know the little town, you know about the church, you know about all of the little things going on, and you know the people, and you just feel relaxed. As all sorts of mayhem, which it happens in your books, mayhem goes on all around, but we have that basic, you know, comfort zone of the people that you have created.
Why, thank you. And I work hard to, you know, it's a difficult balance, quite honestly. I mean, I have to go into the nitty-gritty of the writing process. I'm always a little bit concerned, and I think I'm knocking the wood on my desk right now. I think I've avoided it, but it's easy when you write a long-running series like this to... The characters and the storylines are become like comfortable shoes. You know, you just kind of slip in, and I worry that the writing then becomes too easy, which means it becomes predictable. So the mayhem you talk about is what keeps that from happening. But when Jonathan is home, when he's in Fisherman's Cove, you know, he would die to protect that place, and people in the town who know him would die to protect him. It's that he's that kind of character. He's very loyal. He's got a very strong code. He can be extraordinarily violent. He's not the right guy to be a bad guy against. He surrounds himself with people who are maybe a little less stable than he is, but he's able to control them. So I get so many letters or emails now from people who want to know where Fisherman's Cove is. They want to go visit Fisherman's Cove. And alas, it doesn't exist. So it's except in my head, and I do enjoy my time there.
Well, and you've created... That's the joy, really, of writing, that you create something that is so realistic people think it exists. And that's it is something that I know, you know, it will be a great hit if we could just get to the right people.
We could just get it there.
Because I am, to tell you the truth, during this whole thing, I've spent half my time looking at those little square boxes on the select a movie, and I can't find anything that's really fun and interesting. And your characters, just tell us a little bit about the characters you developed. Of course, Jonathan is wonderful, and I'm sure he's based partly on you and your sort of tough guy part. But then you have this sensitive part, and so tell us about your other characters. I the storyline in this book, it's in all of them, it involves kidnapping, because the name of Jonathan's company is
Security Solutions,
and you go out and rescue people.
He does freelance hostage rescue.
He's got
a covert side and an overt side of the business. The overt side.
And are you there? Oh, my goodness. I think we lost him, Ed. Okay, we're just in the middle of it, and we have to get him back. I don't know. Well, hopefully he will call back in. Or he's talking. He's talking right now about the overt and the covert. Are you back on? We'll hope that he'll call in. Wow. Okay. These things happen, and he is calling back in. And there he is. He's back. He's back live. And we are back.
There we go.
With John Gilson. Okay.
That was so frustrating. I could hear you the whole time.
Ah, okay. Well, I was talking. We're talking about the covert and the overt. And he has connections to the FBI and lots of fascinating people. So just tell, I don't want to give away, I never like to give away the whole storyline. But there
right.
are things you can tell. And then there are lots of surprises, too, unexpected. So what do you want to tell us about Hellfire and about Jonathan and his team?
Well, Jonathan is a former Delta Force operator. Through the Army, and as is his friend Brian Van de Mulebrocky, who goes by the name of Boxers, and Boxers is this behemoth of a man. And Jonathan has surrounded himself with a team of very loyal folks who dedicate themselves to essentially righting wrongs, bringing justice where it can sometimes be difficult to get. In the opening moments of Hellfire, we learned that two brothers are being transported to Resurrection House. And Resurrection House, again, is the residential school for the children of incarcerated parents that Jonathan sponsors. He spends all kinds of money, and it is his charity, and he does it all anonymously because he doesn't want to be known as the charitable guy. And when he learns that these kids have been kidnapped on the way to his facility, he's angry. And one of the reasons I created Resurrection House as a thing, I mean, they're the children of incarcerated parents. So, you know, there's so many plot potentials that deal with that. You know, each of those kids has a past that they're trying to overcome, much as Jonathan has a past that he's trying to overcome. And in this case, we're led to believe that the kids have been kidnapped in order to keep their mother silent, and their mother is involved with drug cartels in Mexico. And not all the assumptions prove to be correct. In fact, very few of the assumptions prove to be correct. And so that's the basis for the story. Jonathan goes to get the Kendall boys back.
And then there's lots of, I mentioned the word mayhem. I think that's a word that I associate now with your books, because the last
That's right, Total Mayhem was the previous book,
it
right?
It was. And so I thought, well, that's a perfect word to use when we're talking about Jonathan Graves and all the things that go on around him.
Well, you know, he's one of those that he does have contacts with. I mean, Irene Rivers is the director of the FBI, whom we know from a book a long time ago. He rescued. He used his extra legal strategies to rescue Irene's children from a kidnapper way back in the day. So he and the director of the FBI are very, very close, and they also have stuff on each other that keeps them from revealing each other's secrets. And Irene, it's not at all unusual within the series for Irene to use her powers as director of the FBI to hire Jonathan to do things that the government can't do. And I think what I hope happens when people read these books, the common thread is that sense of, yeah, the bad guys, they don't always die in the end. But there's always justice. There's always that sense of yes, that's the way it should have happened. And you know, I like that. I want readers to do a little fist bump in the air when the story is over.
And they will with this one. Oh boy, definitely. And, you know, as I said, I'm so sad that we're not going to meet at BouchaCon again. I don't know where we're going to meet next, but this is getting crazy. Wow, it's so. How are you handling this this entire thing? Other than having to stay, well, for a writer, it's not bad to have to stay at home and write. So you know, that's one.
Well, you know, I miss the opportunities to hang out with friends, you know, writer friends and such. But, you know, I'm not a big bar goer. I don't live in a very urban area. So, you know, quite honestly, not a lot has changed. It's just the ability to go places and do things. I feel sorry. I feel so sorry for the entrepreneurs and small businessmen. And uh-huh. You know, somewhere out there, there's a guy that just opened his restaurant, right,
with his
life savings. And, you know, it's just gone.
Well, we're here in Clearwater, Florida, and it's just awful. It breaks my heart. I know so many, you know, restaurant owners and small business owners here, and it is heartbreaking.
It's tragic. But I do think that we'll come through one way or the other. You know, we always come through.
That's it.
It's the nature of us as people, I think, to. We live so much in the present, and we plan for the future. And when present activities interfere with the plans for the future, it feels so intense. But, you know, 5 years from now, you look back, and yeah, we'll either have done a great thing or a stupid thing, but it won't matter because we will have moved on and gotten past it. So,
well,
it's a matter of getting. I get my philosophical hat on and just kind of hunker down and.
Well,
and
one of the things that. People, you know, I always start this program with the line that this program is for writers and those who dream of writing. And for many people who have time now, they don't have to just dream of writing. They can actually start writing. And one of the best ways is actually to subscribe to Jonathan's YouTube channel. It's called A Writer's View of Writing and Publishing. And you have... I think your advice there, what you put on that channel, is so solid and so important that
anybody
out there who's writing now and doesn't know exactly, you know, how to improve themselves or is dreaming of writing, go to Jonathan's YouTube channel.
I'm John. The character is Jonathan.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, in my head, John. Well, that's what happens when you. I associate you with Jonathan Graves. I don't know. I expect big things from you. Listen, go to John's wonderful YouTube channel. And what is your website?
JohnGilstrap.com.
It's JohnGilstrap.com, and it is good. I love it. You just click on it, and it's bright and wonderful, cheerful. It's great. I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I'd like to ask you, if you would come back in July, towards the end of July, when I have an opening, and actually we will talk specifically about your advice on your YouTube channel.
Okay. That'd be great. I'd love that.
Yeah. And by then, I know you've got a few weeks that you're going to be actively promoting the wonderful, wonderful new book, Hellfire. But then in a few weeks, you'll have a little pause and you can come back to Joy on Paper and talk about writing, okay?
All right. Send me the invitation and consider it. Yes.
Okay. And meanwhile, say hi to Joy for me. Okay.
I will indeed.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. This is a really great book. It's really, it's one of these books that you start reading and you don't want to put down. So I'm really thrilled that he was on the program today. And I will have him back because, as I said, he knows a lot now about writing. He had 28 rejections for his first book. And then, whoa, and behold, he finally got somebody to pick it up. And the next thing you know, and it was called Nathan's Run, and it was picked up. I think, who picked it up? Warner Brothers picked it up. So you never know. But you won't know, of course, unless you start writing. And speaking of writing, I want to play a promo here for Glenn Erickson. He's one of the sponsors here on Joy on Paper. And his book is really, it's almost too short because I read it so fast. But it is wonderful. And it is, again, what you can do. Here he was a businessman. And he wanted to write. He dreamed of writing. And he started writing. And he wrote a really good book. So let's play the promo for Glenn Erickson.
From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android, one who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
Hi. Okay. We're going to go straight to the next interview because this is really exciting. I have Bert Weisbord. Did I pronounce it right, Bert?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay. Whew. Wow. What a book. What a book. This is the first in a trilogy, and it's called Danger in Plain Sight. You know, I love this book. I have a particular penchant for books set in restaurants. I don't know why. Or food book, you know, books that have food in it. And so when I got this book, and I thought, whoa, I just like the setting, and I liked your main character because you are, as I know you like to be described, as a character-driven novelist. Because you care about the characters. And in this case, Callie James is a wonderful character that you've developed.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And of course, I'll let you tell people about her, about the restaurant. It's always difficult with a thriller like this, how much you want to give away. You know, they give away a lot, like in the write-up on you know, for the book or on Amazon or wherever. And sometimes, I mean, I like to just start. I don't like to know what's going to happen. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I never read that part. So I'm just, you know, I start and then things happen. A lot of things happen in your books. And of course, that comes from knowing and film as you do, because you put a lot, but in addition to the characters, you have action.
Well, I really am primarily focused on character and what happens to the people and how they change. I mean, I really feel like if there's anything I want people to take away from my books, it's that self-awareness really matters. And as people start to understand who they are and what their choices are and become aware of things they can do otherwise, then you start to see real change. And that's what a lot of this book is about. It's about Callie, who is a restaurateur in a very fine restaurant, and she functions very highly in her restaurant and is really on top of everything. But she doesn't do so well in the world, and she has a difficult past, a husband who cheated on her in Paris, and she left him 14 years ago, and she goes into and hides out in her restaurant, basically, and is fairly rigid and orderly about how she does things.
And she started
and
a new life.
Yeah,
well, you see, I know you're going to say one day what happens, okay? But
I won't.
I don't like to do that. I'm just telling you, turn the page. And when you find out what happens, you're like, it sort of takes your breath away for a moment because it's dramatic, let's say, to put it mildly. And that's, I think that's part of the joy, the reveal, as we go along with the story. And as you said, certainly you have gotten, Callie is a character that you understand. And she does change as from what she starts off in the beginning. She learns and she develops and she's like, whoa, sort of the hidden power that I know she never knew she had.
Well, I think that's right. And what I was going to say was not to really reveal anything that happens in the story so much as what I try to do is create a situation which is like what I like to call is a rich stew, where you have interesting, unexpected people together, and they have to figure out things that are outside their experience. And that's what starts this process whereby things begin to be different. I mean, in this case, she had a bartender who she arrested because he was smuggling ivory into her restaurant. And when she gets in trouble, which is what happens early on in the book, he's the only one who can help her. And she goes to him, and he is furious still with her. And a lot of this book is about what happens between them. And I'm not going to tell anything about what happens, but it's interesting.
It is interesting. And Callie and Cash are a fascinating couple. And all the interaction between them. And I just recommend to people, find yourself a place to where you want to sit for a while. Get yourself a double Americano and start reading this book. And the double Americano is because it's mentioned in the book. And it's exactly, it sets the right tone. You're a little bit in Paris, a little bit... you know, and of course, you having lived in Paris, you have this feel for the city, but and for a great restaurant, and then just sit back and start turning pages. And the fact is, most people won't want to stop. I think many people must have read this book like in a few sittings because it is really, really fascinating.
Well, thank you. I mean, you really do a great job of talking about the book, so I don't have much else to add. I'm glad you felt that way.
Well, let's talk about the writing process, because let's step back a little bit so that people understand that you are actually, you know, very famous on for something else, for film. And let's talk a little bit about that, and about script writing, because script writing... and your relationship with that really is a wonderful, wonderful way to learn to write well, to learn to use words properly. Because I was a script writer years ago, and it's a different type of writing, but I think it's a great training ground.
Well, I really learned to write writing with screenwriters. I had no idea that I had any capacity for writing. And, you know, I went out to Hollywood in 1975, and it was a time when the screenwriters were really at the bottom of the totem pole. And I backed writers early on, and really good writers, writers like Andy Lewis, who had written Clute, and Freddie Raphael, who had written Two for the Road and Darling, and Alvin Sargent, who wrote Ordinary People and Julia. And I worked with these guys, and I, you know, these are guys that, and women as well, who really were not interested in violent action movies. They were interested in movies that were driven by people, and they really have a very, that's the thing about a screenplay, which is, number one, you can't go inside a person's head. You can't say what a person is thinking when you're writing a screenplay. And secondly, you have a very limited time frame, so that you really have to communicate things in a precise way. And I really learned how to make the people make the story move. And that's what I do when I write.
Well, you have to learn to hone your words. Every word is precious. You have 120 pages. So, and really, when you're thinking about it, how you have to, your descriptions have to be spot on, so the person reading the script gets it. Every word, and this is what sometimes people don't realize, that if in a really well-written script, every word is important. And so when you, is that actually a big luxury to turn from script writing to writing a book? Suddenly you have so many more words, so many more pages you can fill in.
No, you're absolutely right. And the restraints on a screenplay really force you to think through where you want people to get to. And you only have a limited number of pages to get there. Whereas with a book, you can go as long as you want, and you can go inside people's heads all the time and sort of explore. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I love writing a novel, is because you can go so much further. But, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that's happened in filmmaking is that there's been this movement from feature films to long-term television. And one of the reasons that that's so popular among the best writers is because they have more time. You know, you're able to write multiple episodes over a longer period of time, and you can go a lot into a lot more complexity than you can in the feature film. So a lot of the most talented writers are now working on, you know, for Netflix or
Streaming video gives you this opportunity, as you said, to just add more depth, use more words, because for a film with 120 pages, when you break it down, there's actually so few words that are said on. People don't realize it's a great film is like that it's so full and so rich that you don't realize how few words have been used, but they are the right words.
Yeah, and that's something that you have a lot more time with a long-form television show than you do with a movie.
Exactly. Well, now, this new book, Danger in Plain Sight, is first of a trilogy. And then I found the characters fascinating. We'll mention, of course, Callie James, and she has a son named Lou. Her ex-husband is French, and he's an investigative reporter. And, of course, part of that comes from the fact that you spent some time in Paris.
That's correct.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit. What did you do in Paris? When were you there? You were a volunteer?
I was at Yale, and Yale had a program where they would let you go away for a year in between your sophomore and your junior year. Anyway, I was able to get a job in Paris working at the Museum of Modern Art. It was a volunteer job. And I spoke some French, and I did a lot of interviewing. It was right after 1968 in Paris.
Oh, that's an exciting time.
Yes, and so this was Animation, Research, and Confrontation was the name of the place I worked at the Museum of Modern Art. And there was a lot of happenings and very exciting art stuff going on. And I was a kid. I mean, I was just 20. And it really opened up my mind to a lot of things I hadn't thought about before. And of course, it often comes back when I'm writing, you know, there's a lot to write about the French and both the good and the bad. and it's interesting to me.
Well, that's why I like the character. I like exactly that, you know, people can sort of pick a character, pick a nationality, but it was apparent that you had some background here that you made him real. And so I just thought that was a great character. And of course, I always like, as you said, Callie starts off as a very organized person trying to start a new kind of life. And she's very caring and very loving about her son, Lou, which is spelled L-E-W, which I thought, well, you know.
Can I interrupt for a second? Because he's a little bit of an homage. The very first person I wrote a screenplay with, and he wrote his first and only screenplay for me, was Ross McDonald, the crime fiction writer.
Oh.
And his character was Lou Archer, and that's where Lou's name came from.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, I like that. That's the kind of thing I like to hear, because one of the things that I've discovered, and I was telling earlier, I talked to John Gilstrap today, and that I've discovered with fans from attending events and from, you know, giving speeches where I get to talk to fans, that the more they know about a writer, that they start sort of personalizing it. A little story like that helps, because they will remember it. It's funny how people remember these little things, because you want them to come back to your books. You want them to care about you too. And I tell you, when they read this story, Danger in Plain Sight, I think they will feel that they found new characters that they really want to know more about. And I think you already have a teaser out for the next book, right?
No.
Not yet?
Teaser is for the audio book for this one that just came out. But yes, I'm working on the next book, and I'm very excited about
it. Because I think it's going to be a great, and of course, the nice thing about you is you have the Hollywood experience, and you know, I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds, and we were set to film it here in Florida, December 2008, and of course, we had the financial collapse. In October, and all of our funding, we'd already been approved for a $5 million tax rebate, but all of our funding collapsed, and so it's been in turnaround. Of course, when we finally got to the point we thought we could, you know, start it back up, she was too old. We couldn't get insurance. But so I know that feeling of what happens. But I think in your case, you have, you know everybody. I think you know everybody tell us some of the people that you've worked with in Hollywood, because it's impressive.
Should I talk about writers or actors and actresses?
Oh, whoever comes to your head.
Well, mostly I work with wonderful writers, and you know, Ross McDonald was a remarkable person to work with, and you know, he had never written a screenplay, but I really got to know him very well, and he's such a fine writer. And Andy Lewis, who had written Clute, I worked with him on four screenplays, and that was exhilarating. And I worked with Freddie Raphael, who wrote Two for the Road, Darling, Far from the Madding Crowd. And in fact, I worked with one of my very earliest experiences in Hollywood, and this was a long time ago, was I went with Marty Scorsese, and he was going to direct this project, which is called Haunted Summer, which is about the summer that Percy, Lord Byron, and Mary Shelley, and so on, spent at Chillon. It was a summer house, and she wrote Frankenstein, and it's about that process. And Marty, who was really interested, and he wanted to meet with writers, and so we went to London to meet all these great writers, and one of them was Freddie Raphael, and then we went on with him, and I didn't really put all this together, but he was going to the Cannes Film Festival, and I was just going to watch, and, just see what it was like. And he won that summer for Taxi Driver, and that was very exciting. So that was exciting for me to work with him. I work with developed screenplays for a lot of actors as well. I did one, too, with Robert Redford, and one with Lily Tomlin, and I went to New York on another Freddie Raphael screenplay to read it with Al Pacino and Diane Keaton, and that was right after.
Look, I don't have enough time to go through everything today with you, but would you come back and talk to us more? Okay, I'm going to arrange for you to come back because there's so much to talk to you about. And I just wanted, but I did want to get you in, today so that we can talk about the new book and the first in your series. And, I think you're fascinating. I know that we're going to eventually see this as streaming video. But right now I want to tell everybody, go out and get Danger in Plain Sight. Get yourself a double Americano. It's by Bert Weisbord, and it's a wonderful book. You will enjoy it. Lots of great characters, and also lots of excitement. So, Bert, I want to thank you, and I will have you back. I will contact your people, and my people will contact your people. I'd love to say that.
Great.
Isn't that wonderful?
I would love to do that. Can I give people my website before I get off?
Just what I was going to ask you. Where do you want people to find you?
The best place is Bert Weisbord, BURTWEISSBOURD.com. And all the books are on there and a lot of other information.
Exactly. And they should, while they're there, they can see a lot of the other books that you've done and a lot about you. And there's just so many fascinating things about your life in general. And one of the books that I really enjoyed is In Velvet. And I read that and I thought, woo, this is cool. I am so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. And Bert, it was wonderful to talk to you. And I will have you back soon. And we'll talk more about Hollywood, script writing, and about the fact that you are going to eventually, we're going to get this wonderful new series on streaming video. Okay?
Well, thank you very much. And I really enjoyed the interview.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Wow, he's great. I like him. Danger in Plain Sight. You have to get this book. Okay. Well, I want to take a few minutes. This whole event of everything that's happening in the world brings to mind, I've been, of course, thinking about all of the writers, and what I really... If you have any time, I really want to ask you all, if you have enjoyed a book recently or in the past, even if it was 2 or 3 years ago, and there was a book that you enjoyed, it's stayed in your mind, take a few minutes, because you have a lot of time now, and go and write a review on Amazon. I cannot tell you how important it is for authors, one, to have that wonderful feedback from their fans. Also, it's important for this whole algorithm that Amazon uses to recommend books. If an author, even if it's a great book and it has only, you know, 10 reviews, it doesn't pop up with the algorithm when they are putting books in front of customers. You know, as you know, you get advertisements from Amazon all the time, or you get emails, you know, this book might interest you, this book might interest you. But if there are not the reviews, the algorithm just kills these books, and it's a tragedy. It's really a tragedy. I know of a few books that are so terrific, but the people who read them didn't do a review. So take a few minutes and do that. And also, again, I have mentioned it before, this is a time to get over everything. Get it all out of your system. Stop all, this is 2020. We have to all stop the hate. We have to all stop being neglectful of our family and our friends. And if you're lucky enough to have wonderful family, make sure that you stay in contact with them, get in contact with them. I just want to take a moment to say how grateful I am to my husband, Asher, the most wonderful, wonderful man in the world, and my son, Daniel. I am so grateful for everything that he does for me. My sister, Natalie, fantastic. She's called the connoisseur of cozy mysteries in our family and in the writing community here in Florida, because she knows cozy mysteries, and it's wonderful how she has introduced me to so many cozy mysteries, because that's not actually wasn't my genre, but she always encourages me on the mystery writers that she discovers. And of course, also my brother Tom and his wife Debbie, who live in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They're youpers, and and my brother has to be the only one who did not complain when it snowed in May in Michigan. I mean, really, I like, are you crazy? It was May 11th and he had snow and he was happy. He's calling me, oh, it's snowing outside. I said, it's May, what is wrong with you? You know, you're such a baby. But anyway, he's a delight. And of course, I want to also thank my goddaughter, Kanisha. Thank you, Kanisha, for everything. And I love you and I appreciate you so much. And a special hello to Jim Lamb. I'm going to play some more of his poems next week. And meanwhile, I want to end with this song, because this is an important song for all of us to take to heart.
So